Pretty sure that members will come in as soon as we start. They typically do. So we may as well. I think we should go ahead and start. And we had one other member who checked in, but he's in taxes. So we need two more to meet quorum.
Thank you.
But I think we should go ahead and start. Senator Sparks, good morning. We have Senate File 2056.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing this important bill this morning. Senate File 2056 is the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council recommendations. Members, Senate File 2056 is a bill recommended by the Workers' Comp Advisory Council to implement a DRG reimbursement system for inpatient hospital payments. This is a big first step in addressing medical costs within the work comp system. It was with great effort over many years and with the help of many people that this agreement was reached. And I would like to thank all those who were involved in putting this together. I know the rulemaking is what this committee wants to review, and that was a key provision in reaching a deal because it helps us in advancing reform for outpatient services. Madam Chair and members, if it's okay with you, I'd like to turn it over to the Department of Labor and Industries Commissioner Ken Peterson. He will walk you briefly through the bill, talk about the rulemaking, and certainly answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Senator Sparks. Welcome, Commissioner Peterson, to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Ken Peterson. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. This bill, as Senator Sparks pointed out, for some time we've had high workers, the medical costs of hospital costs in the workers' comp area have been unduly high, much higher than some of the other group health rates and other rates. So for some time we've been trying to find a way to bringing them down. At the same time, we've had problems with the number of disputes we're having and the administrative tangles we've been having between fights between the providers, hospitals, and insurers or payers. And so what we did was brought the two groups together, the hospitals and the insurers, in a 8-month-long negotiation process, trying to look at ways of bringing down costs on the one hand, on the other hand, lessening administrative disputes. And that's what the bill does today. It adopts the use of the Medicare DRG, it's diagnostic related groups. That's what Medicare uses for their billings. And what it really means is that instead of the charges you have for a hospital, for your costs, you just charge the same price for every, say you have a bad shoulder. For every shoulder repair work you do, you just charge the same price as opposed to the cost you do. Right now, the system is 85% of all cost, of all charge. I'm sorry, 85% of your regular customary charges. This system would move to the Medicare system, which is just charges for the diagnosis, and that's worked pretty well for Medicare. And what it does is say 200% of what Medicare charges, you'll get for your workers' comp. The hospital will get their workers' comp work, and. The reason for the 200% is generally it costs more to do workers' comp work than it does Medicare work. On the other hand, we've eased administrative, reduced the number of fights between the two of them by requiring quicker payments and requiring that the insurance companies not ask for quite so much in terms of their in their billings. They not get quite as much information, and that's covered in the various provisions of the bill. This bill was approved on April 7th after the deadline by insurers and hospitals, and then by labor and management. The Workers' Compensation Advisory Council is composed of five representatives of labor, five representatives of business or management, and also two representatives from each legislative house, which Senator Sparks is one of the members. And we did come to an agreement on April 7th. That's why we're late here. One of the parts, though, and this is what concerns why we're here before this committee, that we did include an expedited rulemaking. We do it for two reasons. The first is that if Medicare changes any Medicare changes are made between now and January 1st, when the hospital DRGs go into effect, we'll be able to do expedited rulemaking to take advantage of that. The second part is, though, the more important part, is that hospital costs are about 25% of the total workers' comp medical bills. The other 75% are done by outpatient clinics, such as ambulatory surgical centers, as well as outpatient work in hospitals. That's the big part. What the parties have agreed to do over the next year is to come to a negotiated settlement over how we should charge for that on some sort of DRG-type system. However, the parties have also agreed if they don't come to an agreement, then the department will do rulemaking to bring about the agreement. The rulemaking will be completed by January 1st, 2017. And so that's why we need the expedited rulemaking for that. It's part and parcel of the agreement made between the reach between management and labor and between the hospitals as well as the insurers. And that covers, so we need, so it's all in Section 8 of this bill, and we do need both rulemakings to make the bill work.
Thank you, Commissioner. Let the record reflect that we now have a quorum. Commissioner, I have a question about the word may in the rulemaking. It says the commissioner may adopt or amend the rules. We give you permission, but you don't have to. Could you explain that?
Madam Chair, members, the reason it says may in there is that if we come to an agreement over the next year between the insurers and the outpatient providers, then we'll not need to do rules at all. And we'll just come back to you next year, the next session, and ask you to approve it. But if we don't come to an agreement, I'm sorry, I probably wasn't as clear as I should have been, but if we don't come to an agreement that the legislature can approve, then we'll do it by rulemaking.
I see.
And the parties have agreed to that.
Okay. Another question I have, Commissioner, is about the report. So the reason the Subdivision 7 talk about a study, I shouldn't say report, the study, could you tell us a little bit about, you know, why we're expecting you to study this and the impact? Are there any specific issues within this process that you feel you need to review and just kind of report on? Could you explain that?
Madam Chair and members, the reason that Subdivision 7 is in there is to do a study to make sure that we are saving money, that it is costing less, and that the hospitals are earning a fair return on their covering their costs in terms of providing medical care to people. So it would just be a study to take a good look at it. And then, if necessary, we will report to the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. And then, if we need to make changes that rise out of the study, we'll come back to the legislature asking you to make those changes.
Okay. Thank you. Members, do you have any other questions? Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And in that same vein, I was wondering if there was a cost for the study, or is that going to be done in-house?
Madam Chairman, Senator Scalzi, it will be done in-house.
Members, do you have any other questions for Senator Sparks or for Commissioner Peterson or his staff? If not, I will entertain a motion. Senator Eaton moves that Senate File 2056 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The motion is adopted.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members, for holding this late meeting.
Thank you, Senator. We appreciate that you did all of this work. I know you were patiently waiting for this bill, so I'm glad we got it. Next in the agenda, members, we have the confirmation of the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs Commissioner. And we welcome you.
We're all tired.
Welcome,
Madam Chair,
to our committee.
My name is Larry Shalito. I am the Acting Commissioner of Veterans Affairs for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Shalito. We are delighted that you are here, and we have worked with you, so we know about your vision, but we would like to hear a little bit more about some of the key issues that you think we need to be attentive to and some of the plans that you have for the next, now 3 years, I guess. Time goes really fast. But please tell us a little bit about, you know, what you've seen so far and what your vision for the future is.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe the department has made significant strides over the last 4.5 years. The department has gone through a whole series, as we all know, since 9/11. This war has and still remains having troops deployed all across the world. As Adjutant General, I was responsible for deploying over 20,000 Minnesota troops into a combat zone. And of that, I also was responsible to present over 20 flags to the families of the fallen from Minnesota. So the care of the veterans is extremely important to me. I am also a veteran of the Vietnam War. I served in Vietnam for a year. I lived with the Vietnamese as an advisor, and I came back home in 1971. And the aftermath and the attitude of the country was less than remarkable. So we created, during my tenure there, what is referred to as Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program to ensure that the community support was there for them. Then as commissioner, I noted that all of a sudden, when they declared the war over, how do we sustain and make sure that our veterans are being taken care of? That is why I threw my hat in the ring, and Governor Dayton, who I'd worked with when he was senator, appointed me as commissioner. Things we focused on is, first of all, making sure that their benefits were made available to them. A simple one such as dental. Troops coming home get free dental care if they get it within the first 90 days. The military had a policy that when you come home, we're to leave you alone for 90 days so that you would report on your 91st day. And that didn't work. So we went against the Department of Defense to say, no, we're going to have our troops meet to make sure that we bring them all the way home. With the program, the department is divided into two major groups, program and services. And with that, I'm just going to go through very quickly. The program and services that they provide include claims and field operation. Every county in the state of Minnesota has a county veteran service officer, and they're the direct points of contact. We have 360-some thousand veterans in the state of Minnesota. We have an education vision, and we're responsible for the GI Bill, not only the federal but the state. And we just have a large number of those troops coming back home. In fact, I'll be at Gustavus Adolphus on a panel talking about how we take care of our veterans as they do come back home and get back into society. In my case, for example, when I came back home, everything I'd planned to do when I graduated from college the first time, I wasn't going to do. Back to college on the GI Bill and got my second degree. I now have four to make sure that I just had time to regroup, if you will. We also have the cemeteries and memorial affairs. We have the Little Falls Cemetery that we're responsible for, and last session, the Preston Cemetery, which is being viewed federally, is going to be a benchmark, landmark case scenario because of the terrain and the beauty of it. We have our benefits division, and working to make sure that our veterans do get the benefits that they have earned. Vast majority of veterans, by the way, don't get benefits directly. I see a disability benefits, but they work with our county veteran service officers who we help support to go through and submit their claims and so forth. Myself, I am a 20% disabled veteran, but it's more of what we would call the it was around a lot of loud noise when I was in the military, so I have a hard time hearing. So if I lean forward like this, it's because of that. Then also I have some other issues related to that that aren't that important, but the VA is taking very good care of me, so I can go to the VA and get checked up and get the medications to make sure that my blood pressure is stable and my cholesterol is stable and so forth. Those are the things that we provide. The veterans in the state of Minnesota is a $2.3 billion industry. Of that industry, about 900 and some million of it, less than $1 billion, goes to the VA centers in both St. Cloud and in Minneapolis, and they don't count the service providers or regions of Fargo, North Dakota, and upper in the northwest Minnesota, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota, in the southwest sector. So the rest of the money goes to the veterans community. And as I like to tell, and I told the Association of Minnesota Counties, that is the money that they don't, that doesn't go through their coffers. The biggest problem I have is the supporting of the county veteran service officers at the county level, because they don't see the volume. Well, I want you to know that there's a large number of veterans in your county that receive benefits, and therefore they don't need to come to you for support. That and their Social Security, because we're aging, takes care of that well. And there will be in the annual report, which I have available.
And we have a copy, members. It's
yes.
A very good report.
Yes, and you'll see by county the data that is going out to help support those veterans. So that's on the program and services side, we're very, very fortunate. On the home side, which is the vast majority of our budget and our operational tempo, we have veterans homes in Fergus Falls, Hastings, Laverne, Minneapolis, and Silver Bay. We take care and work with them on a consistent basis. When I inherited this position, the homes tended to be on the front page of the TRIB, issue here, issue there, and we have cleaned that up. We have made sure that it's being stabilized, corrected, doing very, very well. We were able to complete the Minneapolis campus, as you, Madam Chair, you're well aware. It started out, and now that three-phase project, which is in the middle of phase two, is completely funded for all three phases. It's done and over, other than building it. Federal money is there. The state money is there. The contracts have been let, and so we're going that way. Also, the leadership with the homes has created a number of innovative activities and are consistently on what is called the Pinnacle, a private group that does surveys of the customer and their families, as providing excellent service. So we're at a 4.6 out of a 5 nationally, and that's very well. So we're very, very fortunate that way. So my goals and objectives for the next 3 years, 3.5 years, is to now stabilize what we have achieved. And I think the operative term is institutionalize it. So that becomes the normal way of doing business. We're almost there, but it's steadily gaining the improvement in the way we do business. And also we're looking very, very actively at, love the concept, OPM, other people's money. We're looking at, we're doing more with CMS on the federal level, making sure that we can collect and get reimbursed for the medical expenses that are being incurred by our clients at the veterans. And also working to reduce the cost through efficiency. We have Kaizen groups, support groups, a lot of training, standard business operating procedures to operate in a lean environment is probably the buzzwords I would use. So that's a very quick overview. I didn't know where the or what the questions would be, so I'm jumping around a little bit, but I'd take questions.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. And I serve in the Finance Committee, members, so I was invited to do a tour of the center in my own district in Minneapolis, and I have to tell you that I was so impressed. You know, this, when you work into an organization and you see just physically what it looks like and how people relate to you and how they talk about their place and the work that they do, it reflects what goes on deeper. You know, we know it because we review this, but it's easy to see just superficially what goes on in an organization just by seeing your staff and the physical appearance many times of these places. And I just see the remarkable transformation in Minneapolis and how proud people are and how committed the staff is to doing the work that they are doing and doing it with pride. And I am very thankful for that, Commissioner. It is a remarkable difference. I've been there, you know, this is my 10th year in the Senate, so I've been there before. So I thank you for that work.
Thank you.
Members, Senator Hall, Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Shillito, thank you for what you do. I have a lot of respect for our VA. Both my father and my father-in-law were in the Second World War. And I grew up right by the VA hospital in Minneapolis. Matter of fact, my first job was feeding the veterans from World War or from Vietnam War that came back that couldn't feed themselves. My job at 14 was to feed them. But I want to ask you one question. On page 7 of the pamphlet here, it talks about the customer satisfaction, and I see we're way above the national average on customer satisfaction, except I'm a little concerned about the professional therapy, that we're not a big jump above the national average. And just wonder if you had any thought on that, any reason that that might be a little bit, it's not lower than national average, and I commend you for that, but just wonder why it's not quite as high as the rest of the fields there. I can understand where laundry stores might not be all that high, nor that, well, maybe it is important. But not being a military myself, I don't always understand that. So any comments on that?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Hall, Senator Hall. I don't know. To me, it's not an anomaly. It's just the way these ratings go, so forth. Not all residents are involved actively in some of that therapy. You know, so that could be a group of people saying, well, I have no comments, so what do I do?
Sure.
Again, okay. The goal is to be above average.
Yeah, and you are. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair and Commissioner, and we're honored to have you here today. This is one of the great things about this committee is we get to meet our commissioners, and it looks like you've been doing a pretty good job. And I'm just kind of curious, and I don't know if it's in this book, or I don't even know if you know at this point, how many of the returning veterans take advantage of the GI Bill. And I don't know how many returning ones are eligible. I mean, is it sort of like half, or is it a third? Do you have a handle on how many actually take future training?
Madam
Commissioner.
Chair, Senator Scalzi, right now the last figure I saw, 15,000 of our people were taking courses. It could vary, and that's a current number. For example, when I went back from my service, I already had my degree. I went back to college, and they said, right, well, you can pick up a second degree in a year. Mm-hmm. So I did it. I was in and I was out. And to be honest with you, this war's been going on for a long time. So, hopefully we want people to graduate if they're going for a four-year degree to be through in 4 years. And, as I stated, about a third of those deployments came from our National Guard. And the number one reason Minnesotans join the National Guard is for their college benefits and education. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them already had credits under their belt. In fact, in some of the early deployments, we worked actively with the Department of Defense so that they could take correspondence courses while they were deployed, initially in Bosnia, then Kosovo. Iraq was a little more difficult, but they still were doing it. And that is why you'll probably see the number one credit generator for the university systems is now their virtual university campus. So just help kickstart a lot of those things, getting it going.
Thank you.
I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In relation to what Senator Hall just asked about the satisfaction, it's interesting that he should bring that up, because about 3 weeks ago when whenever the weather got a little bit nicer and we got pushed out into the front yard to do some raking, which, anyway, never mind that one. But I happen to have three of my neighbors who are all, one was a, well, two were Vietnam vets and one was a Korean vet. And they just stopped by to say, you know, how the thing's going and down here at the Capitol and so forth and so on. And they mentioned, I asked them, I said, so where are you guys getting your medical help? And they said, well, we went to the Minneapolis VA. We'll never go back there. And I said, really? I said, what's the problem? He said, well, you get in there and you try to find something, someplace to go. Everybody directs you to a board, and you have to look on the board, and then you still don't know when you get to the wherever the board says you're supposed to go. When you get there, the people there at the particular station that they're at, they don't know where to send you from that point on. And I said, so where are you getting your medical help? Oh, we love St. Cloud. We love the VA hospital. So I'm just asking the question that my three neighbors are going, we'll never go back to Minneapolis. And I don't know the distance from Buffalo to Minneapolis or the distance. I think it's a little closer to go to St. Cloud, but the fact is that they were all, had been all told that Minneapolis would give them some great opportunities. And so when Senator Hall brought up the customer satisfaction thing, I thought, well, interesting that three of my neighbors should say that, and then he brings this up, and I'm just your comments on our thoughts.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson.
I've been lost at least three times in the Minneapolis VA. It takes about three times to psych out the building, because they've got a numbering, lettering system that once you figure out where the, oh, this means the floor, this means the section, those types of things. I will tell you, historically, there has been an issue going back, a legacy issue of the phrase commonly used is, this is not your dad's VA anymore. When I came back and so forth, it was, don't talk to us. Or, you know, it was just, it was sort of like, but the VA, I will tell you, is bending over backwards, especially in, you know, with all the blow-up they've had in the last couple of years. My first visit to the VA was in 1990. I want you to know I have two spots on my lungs. And they went through, and they had the state-of-the-art equipment that told me is it's not cancer. We don't know what it is. It's encapsulated, so we're going to monitor you. And for the last umpteen years, in fact, my last physical in the military, the radiologist came running down the hall to see me because he had been doing my work for the last, every 2 years I had to have another x-ray, saying to me, you're clean. You're good. Nothing has ever changed. So part of it, I'm going to say part of it is attitudinal, you know, but it's just a common phrase. They're working on it. I would have shared those same experiences or definitions, but now I'm going to be one of their strongest advocates, because I finally said, all right, I now know who to talk to, how to work it out. The number one complaint I have got on the Minneapolis and any of the VAs is when the federal VA went from a, we will pay you, you submit your mileage, and then we will send you a check, versus they used to, you could go down to a little disbursement area and say, I drove 110 miles, and they would give you the cash, and then you could go. They're mad now that they are financing the VA because they have to wait for their travel money. And it, so they're doing well. And, oh, by the way, Senator, I just visited with my wife's cousin, who is an ophthalmologist at the Dallas VA and so forth. And he's been working, went out of private practice and is now working with the VA. And he experiences some other things, too. There's a difference between the private sector and the public sector. And those are some other things, too. So it's a long story. But it's, yeah, I can't answer that. I've heard it. I've experienced what they're talking about. But I am very, very supportive of what's going on there now.
Thank you, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also sit on the State Government and Veterans Affairs Division, and when you your agency came in to do a presentation, you mentioned that you needed a much more a larger amount of money for increased staff at the veterans' homes, not necessarily the hospital, but the veterans' homes. And I'm just wondering if you could give us some detailed information about what that all entail as far as the homes needing more finances.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, we are not asking for more FTE. What we are asking for is the ability to pay the FTE that we do have. And a lot of those factors are beyond my control. So forth. They just go up, those situations. So we're looking at, we're very, very lean. For example, I have two vacant positions in my deputies. My two deputies retire. One's been over a year, and the other one's at a year that I have not placed, just to make sure that we can cash flow what we have already. And so, and then as we're looking at, we've been very, very active in lean projects, so forth, to reduce the costs. We have changed some, and some of you may have even got calls for some of our employees. They're a little concerned because we are now tightening up some of the hour, so forth, shifts. Because the number one problem I've experienced with the legislature and a lot of staff is we are much like corrections. We are a 24/7 operation. You just don't say, well, you know, Jerry didn't show up, so we'll just kind of fill in and not backfill his position. No, we got to have people there. So, yes, we're asking for more money, but those are things that are external factors that have influenced it. Salary adjustments.
So, Madam Chair,
Senator Anderson,
Commissioner Shelton. So, you're saying you just mentioned about two positions in your office, but what about the homes specifically? What is there a problem? I mean, is there something that needs to be upgraded in the homes across the state that needs more money? Is there more people that have to? You said no more FTEs. But you just mentioned two FTEs that are missing, so I'm kind of...
Commissioner.
Right. Madam Chair, Senator Anderson. Yes, there's no more FTEs additionally. But what we're able to do, because we no longer have Michael Gallucci as the Deputy of Veterans Home, able to stabilize and then shift some of those resources, those dollars, to the crude term is where the rubber meets the road. You know, we are the second largest employer, or one of the larger employers in the state system, and we also, by the way, have the second largest minority. I think I can't remember who just went ahead of us, but you could walk into the Minneapolis home and listen to about five or six different foreign languages if you had, because we're a major supplier. One of the biggest issues was with the bridge that, Madam Chair, you're very, very familiar with, and how do we get them around? We do now have special busing. I'm giving you long answers, but you can't go down to say, well, I just get rid of two of them. You know, it's what we're doing is rebalancing, I believe, where we need to have the key positions to make sure that the veterans and the staff are taken care of. That means requiring some staff people to work weekends that they normally didn't have to. We have what we call a six on, six off.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm sorry that I have to interrupt, but we're going to have to go to session in about 4 minutes. So I think Senator Johnson had a question.
I can
Senator.
Talk to the Commissioner.
I think it's at noon. Oh, it's at noon. Okay. Oh, sorry. Then never mind. You can continue to ask questions. I think this is very informative. So Senator Johnson and Senator Hayden.
Commissioner, I've I've always said that, you know, being a legislator is like going to college, because you get to listen to so many things and learn so much from all the various areas, and you get to ask questions that even if somebody thinks you're not very informed, they still give you the respect and answer. And that's why I'm prefacing my question. First of all, National Guard people, are they eligible for veterans' benefits? And then secondly, I'm wondering if you have a waiting list for people who have served in the military, not necessarily in a battle, is there a waiting list, and how much is it for veterans? And could you tell me the criteria for a veteran to get in?
Commissioner, and I think your staff is ready for you as well with some information.
We'll give you, Madam Chair.
The first question was about National Guard, Madam Chair.
Going back to the National Guard first. Pre-9/11, virtually all of them would probably not have qualified for veteran status, because they do not, there's a minimum requirement that they have to be on active duty. This is one over the world, but kind of the first one, 180 days. All right. Once 9/11 hit, and we started sending them to Bosnia, then to Kosovo, then to Afghanistan, and then to Iraq, and then to Kuwait, and so forth, all of a sudden they were on duty. So every deployed Minnesota National Guard-wise that was deployed overseas in a combat zone is a veteran. So it's a definition and not what branch you were. So what we're seeing is a large number of our National Guard people who came in, get their college education, because that's the number one benefit of the Guard. They got deployed, they came back, they made sure they got their obligation completed, and they probably said, well, that was good enough. I now have my GI Bill. I'm going to go back to school if I need it, but I don't want to be deployed again. So on that side, I'm missing part of your question, too.
Whether they would be eligible, Madam Chair.
Yes,
and Commissioner. Whether that person who had been deployed is eligible for health benefits for the rest of their life.
That is, Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Senator, yes, they would be. They'd be like myself, who had been drafted. I mean, once they've gotten that ticket punch of 180 days of deployment, active duty. Now, if they were on active duty for a shorter period of time and got injured while on active duty, and it's well documented and so forth, that kicks in also. That supersedes the 180 days.
And you also asked Senator Johnson about the waiting list of people who are in the waiting list to come in.
Right now, Madam Chair, excuse me, Senator, we do have a large waiting list. Each of the homes, the only exception would be Hastings, which is a domiciliary, which means it's just basic bed and board. But all the homes that you would classify like as a nursing facility, all of them have waiting lists, and they vary in time from less than a month to Minneapolis, which is the flagship. It could be as much as 100 days. And that'll vary, and that will flux. We have had actually situations where a person said, one, we can't get you into Minneapolis, but B, we have space available over here, and you could do that and then get moved back. That is a rare, but has been done also. So that's it. I mean, we're fully occupied. You'll see the occupancy rates generally will be at a 97% to 98% rate. And I relate that to just the turnover of people, because it's not like checking out of a hotel where the maid comes in, cleans it, and then the next one comes in. There's admission times, et cetera.
Madam Chair,
one
more. And this is regard to same similar thing. For health benefits, is everyone eligible if they've just been in the Army for 2 years or
to
get their health care benefits from a VA?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes.
And is there a waiting list? That was what I was asking.
I think he just alluded to that. Commissioner.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but basically there has to be a service connection. If you were out of the military and then you get in a car accident, in my case, being in Vietnam, there were so many people that were trying to figure out if they were not a victim of Agent Orange, they made it presumptive. So I can go to the VA and say, I'm having symptoms of Agent Orange, and they will not say, well, prove it. Were you in country? My orders say I was in country. Therefore, it's taken care of.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Johnson, Senator Hayden, and Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. And if I'm sorry that I was late, and if you've answered this, I am very interested in the suicide issue and the mental health issue. I know that we've just had a display around the Capitol with the 23 boots conversation about what is happening, and many of the members here know that I actually have a cousin that we are going to bury on Tuesday that was active duty Navy that committed suicide about 2 weeks ago. So full disclosure, wanted to just get your thoughts and maybe the programs that are dealing with this issue of mental health, and in particular, what seems to be somewhat of a rise in suicide with service members.
Madam Thank Chair, you, Senator Hayden, for Senator that question. We have not asked that question, and it's a very important question. Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Hayden, yes, it is a very, very important question. Suicide has always been, whether when I was tagged right from the get-go, it's always been on the top deal. Anecdotally, I will argue that the suicide rate of the veteran versus the general population, I don't think is that different. It's just that veteran is just assuming that is the issue. When the war started, that's actually the genesis of the Yellow Ribbon Program. Coming back home alone was the worst thing. When I was on active duty, I said probably the largest cause of suicide was Dear John letters. And then when they came back home, as we look at it, coming back and getting into society, we have. And I want to thank all of you for the support on our Support Our Troops license plates. That has given me the degrees of freedom, both as a tag and now as with the commissioner. We partner with Lutheran Social Services to provide free counseling to families and their children. And why them? Because we did a measles sheet of what's the best coverage of the state of Minnesota, and they had it. So we're doing a lot of things that way. The VA with their support groups. I know I just got a call from a veteran, a support group out of Fergus Falls area. So those become issues. But I will also tell you that there will be, every year we have a Gold Star family retreat. And about 20% of that Gold Star family retreat are the parents of a son, primarily, or maybe a daughter, who committed suicide. And that's real, and that is probably very, very painful, because they can't answer that critical question of why. But I think a lot of it is correlated to relationships back home as much as, if not more, than other things.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator and Commissioner. The staff was just pointing to me about kind of some of the statistical evidence on suicide related to your comment, Commissioner, about whether or not it's higher amongst veterans or not. But we're still looking for, the real. But I think your statement seems to be, it's hard to really figure out if there is a higher incidence. Seems like the numbers are small just to really compare overall.
Madam Chair, if I may also, one of the things that we've experienced is that the military and myself and General Nash now, there's a lot of pressure at the national level that you will identify and account for those things. In the general public, I believe there's far more suicides that are occurring than are allowed, that are, they're socially covered up. That's my personal opinion. I can't document it because I don't know for a fact, but I don't think the military is that atypical, the general population as a whole.
Thank you. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I was curious as to the wait time for an appointment. I know that was an issue a few years back, people needing to get in, whether it was for mental health reasons or medical reasons. I'm wondering how that has been addressed in our facilities now.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator. Well, obviously, when the media got a hold of it, it's being really seriously addressed. They have created some innovative things right now. We have, and I'm not sure if a number of you may have them in your communities, what's called a CBOC, an acronym for a community-based outreach clinic. It's just sort of like the local medical clinic in a town where a veteran can go to and get the check. And that is basically the start of the triage system. They'll go to the community base, all right, you got an issue, I will send you to the nearest VA. And then after the VA, say to St. Cloud, then St. Cloud says, all right, this is more sophisticated than I can handle. They might send you to Minneapolis because that's far more comprehensive. But also they have gotten into where if there's not a clinic nearby and so forth, within, it was a 40 mile, as the bird flies, you can go and see your private doctor or private sector physician. And that was such an outroar because up in northern Minnesota, there's no such thing as a straight road. So therefore, it takes me 45 miles to get something that, whatever. But anyway, now that's been changed. So the people can now go, if they can't get an appointment in X amount of time, I don't know the exact number, so I won't say anything, but it's a short period of time, they can go to a civilian doctor or dentist.
Okay.
Those types of things. And it's still in its infancy, but that's it. To answer the very same question you've just addressed, we got to do something about it. This wait time is killing us. And
thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, as you can tell, you know, the members are very interested in a wide variety of topics about this population. We really thank you for your service and thank you for everything that you're doing right now on behalf of the veterans. I was looking at the statistics, 360,000 veterans. So it's a very large population that you are responsible for and that we need to support. So thank you for doing this work and helping us serve these veterans with dignity and with efficiency. Members, do you have any other questions? If not, we move that this committee recommends that the appointment of Larry Shalatu as Commissioner of the Department of Veteran Affairs be confirmed. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, members.
Thank you, ma'am.
And that is all we have for today. Thank you. And with that, we will adjourn.
Dan,
we have to.